Good morning and welcome to the Reloading Rag Chew episode 11. Big news that just came out today. Actually, part of the reason the podcast is a little late is because I was finalizing the discussions. The Reloading Rag Chew is joining the Self-Defense Radio Network. This is a group of other podcasters of varying different firearms and outdoors groups, everything from competitive shooting, self-defense, general gun ownership, all sorts of things. I think I'll actually be the token reloading guy over there, but it's really exciting. What this means is a wider audience base, more opportunity for advertising, more help with the podcast. I've got now 12 other people who do this that can help me out when I'm trying to do something new. So really excited. I will put a link on the Facebook page to the Self-Defense Radio Network's Facebook account and also to their website. Their website has a place where you can see all of the various podcasts out there and sign up for any of them. So please, big news for me. Really excited about it. Glad to see it growing. So this week, what I wanted to talk about, Wildcats. Or Wildcat calibers, I believe, is the full correct term for them. And I'll say wildcatting is probably been the biggest thing that got me really into reloading. Before, I would kind of do it for the purpose of making ammo, you know, a little bit more for my money, or, you know, a little bit of trying to push the envelope as far as velocity went or as far as accuracy went. But when I started getting into wildcats, that's where it really took off for me. And that's where I really, really got interested in reloading and learned a lot more about the details of it and started understanding it at a deeper level. It's one thing to go out there and grab your Lyman reloading book or your Hornaday or any of these other reloading books and just take a look at it and say, hey, this powder, this bullet, done. Simple, finished. But you're not really understanding a lot of it there. You're just kind of reading a recipe. It's kind of the difference between a basic cook may be able to take a recipe, put the ingredients together, and make a really good cake, but a more in-depth cook or a more experienced cook may be able to take a pile of ingredients and put it together and make a cake without ever looking at a book and just kind of knowing what's going to make sense based on what kind of cake they want. Or in this case, understand what's going on when you start talking about twist rate and case dimensions as far as how much powder space you have in it, burn rates, looking at different barrels, etc. So wildcatting to me was really my foray into what I will call advanced reloading. Not that I am an advanced reloader or a genius reloader by any stretch of the imagination. There's guys out there that can run circles around me. But it was the first time that I really even started paying attention to a lot of those topics. And the good thing is, nowadays it is easier than ever to get into wildcatting. With the information that's available out there on the internet, with the sheer numbers of different suppliers that are out there, what used to be something that you really didn't hear that much about because it kind of took someone that was really devoted to it and they had to work pretty hard, you know, ordering a reamer from here and then having their gunsmith do this and then either mail ordering dies or making the dies themselves, you know, reading manuals and not even manuals, but magazines and those kind of things to find the load information. It was hard before. The internet has definitely helped that out. Like a lot of kind of, I don't want to say obscure hobbies, but a lot of smaller group hobbies, the internet has brought the people who enjoy it together easily so that people who aren't even in the same country can share information between each other. Let's just start this off. This is going to be Wildcats 101. I'm going to try and start at the most basic, work my way up. If you guys really like this, let me know. We'll kind of have a 102 or a 201, or it's been a while since I went to college and I don't remember how the numbering system works. But, so, what what is a wildcat caliber, or as they're most commonly known, just wildcats? There's a few things, and in fact, this can be somewhat debated, but this is how I see it. Number one is a new cartridge that, especially one that doesn't come from a major manufacturer. This is, someone came up with it. You know, 300 Blackout was an example of this. At one point, it was kind of, there was some corporate backing behind it, but it really started like a wildcat. There was not pre-made brass available. There was a lot of data floating around the internet. There were a few people really pushing it. So it was a great example of how a new caliber can come out there. In addition, one of my absolute favorites is 277 Wolverine, and they are actually now, after a couple years of it being out, making the push to get it officially registered with SAMI and become a commercial cartridge. So just because something starts as a wildcat doesn't mean it'll always be a wildcat. 300 Blackout's a great example. There are a lot of other cartridges out there that they're started as wildcats and they're probably going to stay as wildcats. And what those usually are is cartridges that don't get a significant enough advantage over some other commercial to gain the market's attention. When you look at something like a 300 Blackout, and we'll get into this in a minute, there were some changing dynamics that made a cartridge like that very popular. The 277 Wolverine was designed to bridge that gap between what a 5.56 could do as far as distance and velocity without having the upgrade to a 6.8 SPC and having the larger case diameter and having different magazines and a different bolt and all of those kind of issues. So both those were cartridges that kind of fixed a problem. You know, in general, I think a lot of people agree a Wildcat is anything that's not SAMI approved, isn't made by factories. There are Wildcats that are what I will call factory produced. They're generally small factories. You know, Buffalo Arms produces a lot of different ones that I think several are considered Wildcats. Another big one that I think counts as this, some people may disagree with me, but older, outdated cartridges that are no longer produced. Why I say this is because it's a very similar process to load these. You're still forming brass. You're still running off of limited load data. You may still be casting bullets. A great example of this is if you watch Forgotten Weapons. Ian recently did a show where he was testing some French pistol ammo. I think it was 7.62 French long, if I remember the correct terminology for it. And basically what it was a military caliber. You know, I don't know if it's SAMI approved or not by the fact that it was made before that was ever popular. But there's 100 cartridges that replace it now that are better. 9x19 or 9 Luger, 40. Pretty much any modern pistol cartridge is better. And for that reason, and no one makes a gun in it anymore. So for that reason, no one's really commercially producing that ammo. And there is the option to make it yourself, which is apparently very difficult. But making something like that, I would consider to be wildcatting. Same with the guys that load the old Martini Henry rounds. That's not something you can go down to even your Cabela's or a well-stocked big box store and be able to find it. So if you're forming cases for that and loading that, you're really on the edge of wildcatting there. Some may disagree with me, but like I said, a lot of it's the same thing, and a lot of it's kind of the same mentality. So why would you wildcat? You can sit there and go, there's like 50 rifle calibers out there, and there's 10 or 15 pistol calibers that are common. Why would anyone ever load wildcats? What is the point of it? If I can do this with a 44 Magnum, why would I want a 460 Roland? Or if I've got a 223 or a 308, why would I want a 277 Wolverine? Why would I want a 6mm Mongoose? Why would I want an Ackley improved cartridge? And there's a few reasons for that. There's a bunch of reasons why people do that. One that we see commonly now is new bullet technology. So in the past 10 or 20 years, we've seen a vast change in what they can do with bullets. Everything from the flex tip bullets for tubular magazines where you can get that higher ballistic coefficient with and still get something that's safe to put in a lever action rifle. Whether it's bullets that now can expand at a lower velocity. I mean, you look at 30 caliber bullets 30 years ago, and you pretty much had to fire them out of a full-power rifle cartridge to get enough velocity for them to expand. There weren't bullets out there that were expanding at subsonic or barely supersonic speeds. So in that case, the 300 Blackout would have never really made sense because you would never have had expanding bullets. Now with today's modern technology, there's bullets out there that can be tailored down to a specific velocity range for a cartridge. In addition, there's been a lot of developments, the reduced drag factor rounds, for example. Really great, have great ballistic coefficient, but in some rifles and cartridges, they may have a problem because their nose is so long that they can't fit in the magazine or they hit the lands too early, and a new cartridge or changes to an existing cartridge need to be made to take advantage of those. Some of this is just new ideals on ballistics. For years there, 30 caliber was the king of the ballistics. You know, you had 30-06, you had 308. A lot of that was driven by that's what the military had done the most research on. That's what was out there the most. And, you know, when something's readily available, people try and make it work. But now we see that 6mm and 6.5 and 7mm all have some distinct ballistic advantages over 30 caliber. So, now's the time where we may say, hey, well, let's take that 308 case works great. Let's neck it down to a 6.5 or let's neck it down to a 6mm. And we'll get into what necking down means in a minute. Another big one that I see a lot now is changes in guns or changes in kind of the attitude towards guns. So, for example, a cartridge that does really well on a 22-inch, we'll call that a long barrel. You shotgun guys will probably think that's short, but we'll call that a long barrel rifle, is very different than someone who wants to shoot it out of a 14-inch or a 12-inch. And I think if you went back to the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, because the NFA was there, so short barrel rifles weren't really a thing, and people didn't really understand at the time how easy it was to, I'm not going to say circumvent the rules, but work around them. People weren't trying to develop rifles that used 16-inch or shorter barrels. So when those came around, those need different ballistics to make them work. You don't want a huge, slow-burning powder charge. In addition, we've seen a huge rise in a piece of firearms technology called the suppressor. And before, you know, most people called them silencers and they thought that it was what Hollywood showed that they were. And you put them on a pistol. And now people have realized that a silencer on a rifle is really kind of a great thing. Even if you can't eliminate hearing protection completely, it still makes it a lot more pleasant to shoot. There's been a huge rise in the popularity of suppressors in the market. Plus, you know, $200 tax stamp is, in today's terms, relatively cheap. So there have been a rise of all sorts of cartridges and developments around getting subsonic or slower rounds, which coupled that with the new bullet technology means that you can now have a slower round that works better in your suppressor, and it still opens up reliably enough to use it for hunting. And then finally, like I said, well, two more things. Like I said before, an older gun, a gun that's out of production, military surplus guns. There's a huge collector's market out there for them. There's a lot of diehard collectors. Some of them are going to buy those guns and they're going to put them on the shelf and they're never going to touch them because that's their thing. They collect firearms much like someone would collect coins or stamps. Other people want to buy them and shoot them. And in cases where the ammo is either no longer made, no longer can be imported, is not financially useful enough for any company to bother with, you've got to make that. So you're basically wildcatting there. And then finally, there's the people who want to push the limits. There are those that want to know more or that want to, I want to create the fastest velocity cartridge in a modern sporting rifle. maybe you have that, or I want to get the most power out of a 1911 type of pistol. So there are those that just want to push those limits, and that's why they do it. All of those are very good, valid reasons, and I think that all of those really speak to the firearms community as a whole, of some of the innovation that can be put into this. If you look at what's being come up with out of the hobbyist market now, is more advanced than some of the stuff that the military was able to come up with during wartime and companies that were devoted to this. So I think we haven't seen a major change in firearms technology in the past 20 or 30 years. If you think about all of the action mechanisms that we've got, with a few exceptions, you've got the Vector Chris and a few oddball things there, but they're all very similar. I think that there's been a lot more technology changes on understanding internal and exterior ballistics, understanding ballistic coefficients and making bullets that work for those better, understanding opening velocities on hollow point or expanding rounds and making those work better. So I really think there's been a lot of technology that's been come up with in the ammunition side and the reloading side, and some of that is driven by the hobbyist. I honestly think that if it wasn't for the hobbyist, you know, 300 Blackout's not my favorite caliber. I actually don't own a single rifle in it. There are others that I much prefer over it, but that's really a great example of how the hobbyist drove a cartridge into the forefront. I don't think that cartridge would have gone that far if it was just a military style cartridge. So, when we say wildcatting, what are we typically meaning that we're doing? What it usually means is that you're taking some kind of brass, usually called the parent brass or the parent case, and we are changing something about that case and loading it in a manner different than what it was originally intended. So this kind of falls into a few different categories, and I think what I just said will make more sense as we go through this. So the first one, and one of the most common, is necking up or necking down. And what this is you take the neck, and obviously this is mostly centered around rifles or bottleneck cartridges, is you take an existing cartridge, say you take a 308 cartridge, and you decide, you know what, I really like the short action, it's got good case capacity, it's durable, but I don't like 30 caliber bullets. I want to shoot a smaller bullet. So you neck that down, or you basically push that neck down to a six millimeter. And now you've got yourself a wildcat. Or you say, you know, I really like the short action cartridge, but I want to load a heavier, thumpier bullet. So maybe you expand that neck and you load a 338 in there, or you load a 357 in there, or you expand it all the way out and you load like a 45 in there. So that's necking up and necking down, and that's one of the most basic ways to do it, and it's also one of the simplest. So there's a lot of cartridge conversions out there. The 6.8 SPC has a bunch of these, of like the 6x6.8, and what it is you take a 6.8 case and you neck it down to 6 millimeter. Why? There's a lot more 6 millimeter bullets out there. They're cheaper and they do better at distance. The other thing that's great about those is, and those kind of things, is it's a very easy conversion. So if you invest in bushing dies, which are basically dies where the neck is a removable bushing. So let's say you load 6.8 right now. You go ahead and spend a couple extra bucks, get the bushing dies, because they do provide better performance. Then down the road, you decide you want to do the 6x6.8. Well, you just buy the smaller diameter bushing, everything else still works, and you can be immediately loading on that. In addition, when you go to swap over things on the firearm, pretty much all you're doing is swapping the barrel. The magazine will probably still work. The bolt will probably still work. Everything else is probably still going to work. It just needs a barrel that's obviously reamed for that chamber. So, next one, changing the shoulder angle. And a lot of times, I won't say a lot of times. Sometimes this is done in conjunction with necking up and down. So one of my favorite examples of this is the 6mm Mongoose. You take a 223 case, you neck the bullet up to a 6mm, and it changes the shoulder to a 40 degree, which that 40 degree shoulder is what is commonly referred to as Ackley Improved or AI. So if you look through, you'll find AI everything. 308 AI, 223 AI, 270 AI. So P.O. Ackley in the past determined that a 40 degree neck angle had a lot of advantages, one of which is increasing the case capacity. So he had this idea of basically he would take any cartridge, change the shoulder angle to 40 degrees, and it would do better. And in a lot of cartridges, it does marginally better. I don't think it does better enough for manufacturers to throw out the parent cartridge, but it's a very easy conversion. So, and that's part of where we get into. You can change that shoulder angle. In some cases, you can do that entirely with a die. In other cases, you have to do what's called fire forming, which is basically you use the explosive force of shooting the gun to form the case to the new shoulder. So how you do that is typically you size it to a base thing, and sometimes this is where you can end up with a really weird-looking cartridge where instead of having like a neck, it's actually rounded like a soda bottle. But you load it often with kind of a mild load. Typically, you load it with the cheapest load you can come up with, the cheapest bullets, a cheap powder, and you shoot it. When you shoot it, that case gets pushed out to fill that chamber, and now you've fireformed it. So fireforming is kind of part of changing the neck angle. Another big one is shortening a cartridge. So you take, and this can be mild or it can be extreme. You may want something that's got a 30 caliber parent case, and you want something that's nice and short. Say you need it to fit in a specific magazine. So you cut the neck off where it is, and then you put a new neck in it, basically neck it back down to whatever caliber you want, further down the cartridge. 277 Wolverine does this, 300 Blackout does this. A lot of the AR type of calibers do this. And if you're ever doing that, one of the greatest things for chopping those necks off is there's a little mini chop saw at Harbor Freight. You look at the thing and you're like, what's this good for, cutting balsa wood? Well, what I can tell you it's good for is cutting brass necks of cases. I don't know what else you'd ever use it for, but for that, it does excellent. They're cheap enough, and every now and then Harbor Freight just stops selling them for a while. I don't know if they run out of a supplier. I don't know what happens. That's one thing. If you're a reloader, I would run out, spend the $15-$20, whatever those things cost, to have one. At the very least, if you don't use it, you can wait till they stop selling them for a while and the prices go up and sell it for a profit. One of those things that you should probably have laying around your reloading room. So shortening cases and then re-necking them to a different diameter, putting a new shoulder angle, whatever it might be. One thing with theirs, it is a little labor intensive because you've typically got to rough cut it, form it, then trim it, and then tumble it. So those are some of your slower conversions, but with something like a Dillon 650 and an auto trim, you can run through some of those pretty quickly. And then finally, straight walling cartridges. So this is actually one that I'm working on right now of taking 223 and opening the neck all the way up to make it a 357. Really neat idea, because all of a sudden you've got basically a 357 maximum, but it's rimless and it works in an AR, which is just cool. The 45 Velociraptor, or Raptor, I can't remember which it was, does similar to this. There's a few other cartridges. The other thing that you can do here is, say you wanted a 45 Magnum, which is 460 Roland, but you're going to invent this on your own. You could take something that has the same back diameter, or base diameter, 308, as 45, cut that 308 case off to whatever length you choose and use that. In fact, in a pinch, I think you can actually do that and make 45 rounds. Not the greatest idea. It's a lot of work compared to what 45 brass goes, but right there's an option. Now, if you are looking to convert brass, especially let's say you've got an antique firearm, you're trying to figure out how to make it, There's a book out there that is called, I believe, The Handbook of Caliber Conversions or Cartridge Conversions. I'll put a link up to it if it's still available. It has hundreds and hundreds of examples of how to get to different kinds of brass from various parent brass and the availability. If you are a serious collector, I'd recommend having a copy of that on hand if you're the kind of collector that wants to be able to take things back out and shoot them. So, let's talk about, so you're interested in Wildcats now. What do you need to reload a Wildcat? First, you need something to shoot it out of. While some of us do really like reloading, and I think I like reloading more than shooting sometimes, I don't really like reloading for something that I can never actually shoot. So you're going to need a firearm of some kind to put these rounds through. Now, what are your best places to start? Bolt guns are a great start for the reason of you don't have to worry about cycling in action. If you go with like a Savage or similar, it's very easy to install the barrels. Even a Remington 700, you know, there you got to get a gunsmith involved, but still very simple to do. AR platform, or the modern sporting rifle. This is where I've kind of found my home, and I really like it. Part of what I like there is because of the way that it's kind of self-headspaced, or headspaced, the barrel maker headspaces it, is it makes for very easy conversions. You can take a barrel off, you can put another barrel on very quickly. And, you know, the biggest thing that you got to worry about is the gas system and making sure that that functions. But nowadays, with some of the technologies out there, like adjustable gas blocks, that's a lot easier. You do run into some mag length limits on there, but I think overall, it's one of my favorite platforms for tinkering. The other thing is, because of the cost of it, it's very cheap to throw together a Wildcat upper. And then if you end up not liking it, you can usually sell the barrel for nearly what you got for it and recycle that upper and handguard and all those parts to another one. So the AR is a great one. Also, the Thompson Center platforms. You can get barrels made in pretty much any caliber for those. It can be a little bit more expensive, but really not bad at all. In addition, there's a lot of cartridges that are really Wildcats that are produced by them directly or are out there and available in the used market because they used to be. As far as pistols go, if you're getting into this, Wildcat pistols, with the exception of Thompson Centers, are a little squirrelier, a little bit harder to work with. You're dealing with a lot more issues of function, issues like that. If you are interested in getting into that, I would recommend starting with something that's decently well documented out there, like a 460 Roland, or the 960 Roland, or it's the 9x23 Dillon, or 9x21 Dillon. One of those. Not to say that you can't come up with other cartridges for them, not to say that there's room for improvement out there. It's just a lot harder on a pistol. In addition, pistol barrels tend to be more complex with how they fit into the gun, regardless of whether it's a plastic Fantastic or an old iron, you know, whatever it might be. If you look at the complexity behind any pistol barrel, it's a lot harder to machine than it is a rifle barrel. Therefore, there's going to be less options out there, less manufacturers capable of doing it. So I would really start on one of a bolt, an AR, or a Thompson Center. If you wanted to hear my favorite, on the bolt action, it'd probably be the Savage, just because of the quick-change barrel threading. You can do it at home as long as you've got a fired cartridge or a headspace gauge. And the AR, because of the wide variety of stuff out there, and the ever-dropping price of them has made them really almost more affordable than bolt actions. Next, you're going to need a set of dies. This is where it can get tricky. This is where you've got to do some research. Depending on the cartridge, you might just need a set of bushing dies for whatever the parent cartridge was. You might need a set of custom-made dies, in which case there are ways gunsmiths can make dies, but you're going to have to find a pretty experienced gunsmith to be able to do that. not a lot of gunsmiths out there are more part changer or light machining or finish work. There's not a lot of them that really know how to run a lathe, the different, you know, how to get a resizing reamer. You can't use the same reamer that you did on the barrel itself, for example. So if you do need custom dies, there's several companies that make them. Lee Precision will make them for you. They do better when they've got a lot. Hornaday will make them in lots. Widen Custom Gunworks will make them. And I think that they will do one off if you send them the prints. They're not cheap, but they will do them. And that is one thing just to note about the Wildcats. In general, Wildcat barrels don't cost that much more than a normal barrel. At least not a normal barrel of the same quality. You can find, like in an AR, I can find a Junker sewer pipe 5.56 barrel out there for next to nothing. Whereas a Wildcat barrel may run me $150 or $200. But if I look at the quality of that $200 barrel, it's probably very similar to a $200 5.56 or $300 blackout barrel. So the barrel's not usually that much more expensive. The dies usually are. I've spent up to a couple $100 on a set of Wildcat dies because of the specific needs of them. Sometimes you get lucky. Sometimes it's, like I said, as easy as a bushing die that you can use for other things. Other times you can, if you watch out there and you get involved with groups, someone might be doing a group buy, and you know, maybe you can get a set of the Hornaday dies for $50-$60, which really is not that outrageous compared to their normal prices. So that is something to know. The dies will usually cost you a little bit more. Shell holders are usually pretty simple because you're usually using whatever your parent case is. So, where are my favorite places to shop for Wildcats, to research Wildcats? Number one on the list is Mad Dog Weapon Systems. Mark over there is, you know, it's really funny to listen to him talk and to read about his backstory. He didn't start in the gun community. He started as a hobbyist, and he had some ideas of, hey, let's try this, and fell in with some folks that really helped him out, but a lot of it was just his hard work, and he's created some really innovative calibers. In addition, over there on his forums, it's something of a, for those of you familiar with tech terms, an incubator. It's where tech, you know, newly started companies go to help them grow because they have resources and they have knowledge and they know people. He's kind of an incubator for Wildcats. So people will come over there and they'll, hey, I got this idea. And someone may shoot them down and go, yeah, that already exists. It's this. Here's the problems with it. And it's done. But sometimes someone will come out there with an idea and say, people go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And that's where that group has some resources that they can bring in of gunsmithing and connections to die manufacturers and brass manufacturers to take what's a concept or take something from someone that may not have the means to push it further themselves and take it to the next level and make it a commercially available cartridge. So, Mad Dog Weapon Systems, the MSR Evolution Forum, all the same guys, really, really good guys. Next one, in the same vein, and like I said, I'm an MSR guy, so a lot of these are going to be based around that. AR-15 Performance, also known as ARP. He's got some really cool calibers out there. He's a very, very smart guy. He's done a lot of experimenting with this stuff. He really understands the platform very well. He does provide a decent bit of load data, and he's very helpful if you need assistance on one of his. So, real good place. His barrels are great quality. I've never had anything I bought from him that did not shoot excellent. And then finally, one that I've started using, Black Hole Weaponry. I think they just changed their name. They may be Columbia River Arms or something like that now. They sell a very wide variety of Wildcat barrels. Their barrels are extremely high quality. And while they don't have a ton of load data right on the website, they do have a fairly active forum with a subgroup for every caliber that they sell that has some really good information on it. It's also a good place to just read through and get some general ballistics knowledge. So between those three, those are my favorites. Like I said, hands down, Mark over at Mad Dog Weapons. And part of it is he's really packaged it. You can go on his website and buy a barrel and the dies and preformed brass and in some cases even bullets and the trimmer, you know, whatever trimmer accessories that you need. And you can buy everything that you need for one of his Wildcats. It's not like a lot of them where it's, oh, you go here and you buy the reamer. And then you take it to your gunsmith, and your gunsmith does this. And then you go to this company, and you have to talk to Bill, because Bill knows about this, to buy the dies. And then, you know, that makes it complicated. That makes the barrier of entry very high. Mad Dog has taken that and made it in, you know, they've really made it into the 21st century model of vertically integrating. And they don't make everything. You know, they'll tell you their dies are Lee or whoever it is, but it's still one place you can get the entire package. Just to end this, favorite Wildcats. On the pistol, it's the 460 Roland. That's what everyone wishes their 1911 is. Whenever I see a 1911 and someone goes, it's a hand cannon, I go, no, it's not. Let me show you the same thing, but it's shooting a bullet 75% faster. On the rifle side, it's a hard one. I think my all-around favorite's the 277 Wolverine for the reason of it really is a multi-purpose caliber. You can tag deer out at 300 yards with it, and it's also got a lot of punch up close. So it's got that extra punch of the 300 blackout because, you know, I shoot bullets that are almost twice the weight of a normal 5.56. It's a lot more oomph. But unlike a 300, it's not moving so slow that you're distance limited. You also still get a reasonable case capacity, and you can't accidentally load it in the wrong chamber and blow your gun up. Well, unless it's really wrong chamber. But on the flip side, on the accuracy front, I really like the 6mm Mongoose. I've got a relatively short barrel. It's a 16-inch barrel on one of those. And I cannot load that thing that it does not shoot excellent. It's just such an easy caliber to get amazing results out of that, you know, I have to like it for that reason. So those are my favorites. That's, you know, kind of the 101 of it. That's how I got into it. Like I said, getting into Wildcats really helped me get better with the rest of my reloading abilities and the rest of my reloading interests. So I really encourage you guys to take a look at it. It's cheaper and it's easier than ever now to get into it. And if you watch, you may very well get involved with a cartridge that is on the up and coming and be involved with the next 300 blackout early on. And then someone says, hey, have you seen this new one? I go, yeah, I've been loading that one for like 5 years, man. Where have you been? So happy reloading. Keep it safe. Have a good one.